You are listening to Punk News Podcast, the end of year blowout. We're hitting the wild jams, the best jams of the year, talking about the best shows of the year, arguing, fighting, cursing, hugging, kissing. It's everything goes, anything goes on tonight's Slapdash Punk News Podcast, episode 229. And this is Punk News Podcast 229. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I am here with my compadre, my fellow in arms, my man at arms, the elf to my berserker barbarian, the wizard to my gold hungry dwarf, the critical hit to my number one failure. This is, we are here with managing editor Adam White. Adam White, how are things looking in your bag of holding with your magic missile? How's that stuff doing tonight on the Punk News Podcast?
We're going to start 2015 by being really nerdy. I guess that's a new thing.
and that Poindexter back there, which I thought was really good. That's a podcast editor, podcast master, if you will, PM, Greg Simpson, Greg Orb. Greg Simpson, what's happening?
I don't know. I'm feeling good. I'm still on my winter break off from teaching, so I am just trying to enjoy it the last couple of days.
So tell me, Greg, if you got to pick between the barbarian, the wizard, the cleric, the dwarf, or the elf, who do you pick?
Barbarian.
You got to go with him. He's the best, man. Barbarian is the best. Always go with the barbarian. Adam, I'm going to guess you're more of a wizard or an elf kind of guy.
I mean, like in real life?
I mean, I don't know the boundaries between reality and fiction with Dungeons and Dragons, so I just assume it's real. So I don't understand what that question means.
I mean, I'm not ethnically wizard, but I converted. So.
So anyway, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. Tonight we're doing it's our end of year blowout, so we're just going to be playing a bunch of tunes that we like. Not talking about a whole bunch of news tonight. We're going to push that till next week, and we're just going to be chilling out, hanging out, playing some tunes. And also, I think we should start off with letting you podcast listeners know about the Punk News Podcast, what's going to be happening in 2015. The main thing in 2015 is I love doing the podcast. Podcast is one of the things I look forward to most in the weekend. Honestly, it might be my favorite Punk News outlet right now. Is I'm really looking forward to making the podcast better, stronger, and more, I guess, exciting too. I actually think the Punk News Podcast is one of the better punk rock, if the best punk rock podcast out there, but I want to make it better if we can. But I don't want to lose its core identity. The question is, and maybe Adam and Greg, maybe you could weigh in on this. Like, let's say I've got a podcast about cars, right? And let's say in the world, 500 million people like listening to a podcast about cars, and you only have, say, 500,000 listeners. You've got way more people that you can loop in to your podcast, get involved with your podcast. I wonder if the Punk News Podcast, if we're reaching the vast majority or a large portion of people that would be interested in this kind of podcast. The question is, does this podcast have room to grow, or is it at the bounds of its existence, if you will?
There's always room to grow.
But is there? I mean, for example, let's say I did a podcast about Coptic hieroglyphics. My total audience is about literally 34, you know? So if I have 32 right. listeners, I don't have that much room to grow.
Well, think about all the punks in China where their internet is being firewalled to such an extreme that they just have never heard of Punk News or the podcast. If we could get through to them.
All we need to do is that now that Serial has done its first season, we're going to pick up on the advanced story here and keep going into that cold case, and all the people that listen to that show will start listening to this. All right, I don't know if anyone's fine. topical podcast.
So you want me to murder someone?
No.
Oh, well, okay.
I mean, if you'd implicate yourself in this old murder. Anyways, You ask a good question, and I've been listening to some other shows, much more popular shows, but shows that have kind of a similar kind of weird topic as we do, and to some of the things that they've done over time that have been, I guess that have seemed to me like they could work for us. So one of the shows that I listen to a lot is a bad movie podcast called The Flop House that's really super popular, that two of the three hosts on it are writers for The Daily Show. Anyways, they got involved a little while ago with a bunch of other bad movie podcasts because there's a bunch out there that do that same sort of topic, like do comedy about the same sort of thing. So I think they had that same sort of question where they're saying, are we reaching everyone that could be the potential audience for this, and how do we break through that? And the one thing that they did that I thought was kind of neat was they were calling it a pod crawl, where they had a common topic and they looped in two or three of the other similar podcasts to not necessarily guest host or anything like that, but to pick up the topic. So, I mean, in their case, they were doing things like, okay, we're going to review the bad Star Wars prequels. So one of these bad movie podcasts did the first episode, and then they kind of handed it off to the second podcast that did the second, and then they handed it off to the third show that did the third. And while you never may have listened to those other shows, they all got kind of like the name drop. So, like, yeah, hearing something like that, it was kind of neat. I mean, we could do something like that, reach out to some of the other punk podcasts that are out there. So, I don't know. Yeah. If people would like that, would you like that, people who listen to this?
I'd like it. I think another idea that I've heard people do is kind of guesting on each other's shows. So, like, you know, like, Adam, you could go on some other punk podcast and kind of, you know, talk about the punk news thing and then, you know, kind of contribute to their whatever they do, and then one of them come on ours and be a part of the round table.
Yeah, and I think that's useful. I mean, like, we just did that with
Everything in the Kitchen Sink,
and then they're not a podcast, but we had the what was her name? I'm blanking on it.
Nikki?
That runs Punk World Views.
Not Deanne. Good question. Well, anyway, it's so bad that we forgot her name. That's terrible that we forgot her name. The wonderful young lady from Punk World Views, whose name, she did an excellent job on the Punk News podcast, and her name is Denise Borders, who did an excellent job on the podcast. We didn't forget that. It was Denise Borders. We knew it all along.
It's her fault for having a Twitter handle that's not her name.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so it's not our fault.
Not our fault.
No.
Related, I've been musing this, and I don't know if it's possible, but it might become possible in the future, is what if we made like a whole series of programs related to the Punk News podcast and made the Punk News podcast the flagship program, but we also had like the John – what I was thinking would be the John G. Rock Show, where I interview artists. And we also have a program where we play reggae, or a program where we play all early punk rock, or a program where we play all hardcore, like a radio show, or maybe a monthly game show or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. And the one thing that I think the listeners, here's what I would like to know from you guys, and you can write us at podcast@punknews.org and let us know about this, is there was an attempt a while ago, and I'm sorry if my voice is cracking here, I have a horrible cold, where CBC Radio 3, they had a very popular podcast, they still do, which is the Radio 3 podcast. And what they did is they had a bunch of other sub-shows for it. Now, all of those shows, they existed as their own podcasts, but they did have one thing which was like the Radio 3 super feed, where it was like one RSS feed that had all of their shows in it, so that you could just subscribe to the one and you'd kind of get all the things that they do. So I guess the question is, if we were going to do some of these kind of like cool little sub-shows, would you guys want them just to show up in the feed? So, you know, you've got, you know, episode 302 of the Punk News podcast, episode 303, and then you get like, you know, episode 4 of the John Show, and then episode 305, right?
Well, I already have an offshoot, and I would love for it to be in the main feed.
Well,
sure.
Technically so do I, although I haven't published an episode in like a year and a half, but would you, the listener, be cool with that? I mean, me, as the person making these things, of course, I want more people to listen to them, but you know, would you guys be cool with like some little side project shows showing up periodically, not at the same frequency as the main podcast?
Yes.
Well,
thanks.
Well, right, I said podcast at punknews.org. I'd love for the podcast to maintain its central identity, but kind of get better and maybe get a wider audience. You know, I mean, I don't want to quote sell out. I honestly love the format of our podcast where we argue about news and stuff and play just a little bit of music. But I wonder if we can make it stronger. And I've been thinking, how can we make it stronger? You know what I'm saying?
What other punk podcasts do you guys know of?
Well, there are. I don't want to name them because I don't want to start any beefs or anything. But I mean, honestly, I think Punk News Podcast, for punk rock podcasts, is kind of the best one. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick or cocky, but I think a lot of podcasts, the people always agree with each other. And I think that's the key of the Punk News Podcast, is sometimes we agree, but sometimes we fight too.
Yeah, that's more entertaining when there's arguments.
But all true, but if it's always arguments, that's like not as good either. You know what I mean? I think it's a nice balance.
I disagree, John.
Yeah, fuck you, John. I'm out of here. Put my headphones down.
Well, anyways, so tell us what you think, podcast at punknews.org. So let's kick off and just start talking about some of our favorite songs. My favorite album of the year, The Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll. I've been a Dwarves fan for a long, long time. Well, no, actually, I've only been a Dwarves fan probably for about 5 or 6 years. That's not a long, long time. But I love it. I absolutely love it. Like when one of your favorite band comes along and then just puts out an album that can compete with their best work just out of nowhere. Like everybody's got, like, you know, their favorite bands, and sometimes, like, the Pixies, or they put out a new album, and you're like, yeah, it's all right, it's good. But the Dwarves album, Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll, it just kicks ass. And a lot of people, Dwarves actually got a lot of hate this year. They got a lot of love, too, but they got some hate from some of the Punk News readers because they felt the band was sexist or misogynist or anything like that. And really, I have to stress, I think the people that accuse the Dwarves of that don't quite get it. If you look at the Dwarves' music, it's very nuanced. It's very detailed. You really got to read the lyrics. And it's not so much, say, look at these chicks are hot. It's really saying, let's examine sexuality. Because they don't just look at girls. They look at guys, too. I mean, they don't just study girls. They study guys, too. And plus, they also work in some extremely clever references, most particularly on The Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll. There's sly references to Elvis. There's sly references to the Beatles. There's sly references to Screaming Jay Hawkins, Van Halen. It's a super clever release. Like, at the surface level, it sounds kind of just simple and primal and smashing, and that's what I love about it. But then if you really listen to it, there's a lot of neat stuff hidden under it. So one of my tracks I'm going to play is off the new record, out on Greedy Records and out on Recess Records, The Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll. This track is called Get Up and Get High. And I think, I mean, did you guys check out The Dwarves at all this year? Were you guys fans? Were you guys anti-fans?
I haven't checked out this one yet. And my worry about this, and this is actually what I'm curious, because you almost touched on this, was, so I probably haven't seriously listened to any Dwarves stuff since, like, back in the Epitaph days. Like, I've been aware of them for a long time, but I haven't been following what they've been doing. So is this year's Dwarves album, is it heads and tails above a bunch of the recent stuff, or is it just this year's next, is it like, you know, the next car in the train sort of thing?
I wouldn't say it's heads and tails above the other ones, because a lot of Dwarves records are great, but I would say with most Dwarves records are very unique from each other. The last record, which was called The Dwarves Are Born Again, was their comeback record, and I honestly, that might be my favorite Dwarves record. It's 18 tracks, it's sprawling, it's everything the Dwarves do. It's got the hardcore, it's got the pop, it's got like some of the experimental techno stuff. This album, instead of being the sprawling exhibition of everything they can do, it's much more compact. The last album was like 60 minutes. This album is 24 minutes. This album is, here are the two things the Dwarves do the very best: hardcore and classic pop music, like pop rock. And it's great. And so I would say it's very unique. It's not just another Dwarves record. Like, most Dwarves records have a unique statement. The statement of this one is, here are the two things that we do the best.
Cool. All right, well, you know what? I'm going to throw a song in here as well that we'll play right after your Dwarves track. So my list, of course, had a good deal of Canadian stuff on there, because that is, I guess, my thing. But this year, to me, was a little bit different in that the quality of some of the records that came out from a lot of these Canadian bands this year, to me, it should be appealing way more to the core Punk News audience than the stuff that I would have in past years recommended. There's absolutely times where I would have gone and talked about a band like, I don't know, the Sun Parlor Players, or a band like Cuff the Duke, or something like Elliot Brood, where, you know what, like, the appeal to it is that, you know, if you're a CBC listener and you're into, like, weird Canadian indie folk, okay, you're going to like it. But as far as the Punk News core audience, it might be a little bit of a stretch, right? But the stuff that hit this year, it should absolutely be getting way more attention for the Punk News audience than you would expect otherwise. So the first one, I think I played all these bands on the show before, but we got to reiterate them because we're talking about the best of the year here. So we're going to play a song from Sonic Avenues. This song is called Teenage Brain. Sonic Avenues had a record called Mistakes that came out this year on Dirtnap. Dirtnap, of course, puts out amazing stuff all the time. They're consistently probably one of the best pop punk labels, or the best garage punk labels, or I guess, you know, drawing the line down the middle between those two things, the most consistent that I think that is around these days. So this band is from Montreal. There is this crazy amount of harmonizing and stuff like that's going on this record. There's something really crazy about the production that I've yet to really put my finger on. There's a warm quality to it where it's fuzzed out, but with the fuzzed out kind of garagey production and then the harmonies, there's this just like great wall of sound quality that you don't normally get from bands that are doing like the Buzzcocks adverts thing. So anyways, so the song that I'm gonna throw into the mix here is gonna be Teenage Brain by Sonic Avenues. Greg, what do you got?
Okay, so this year I made a casual list just for my own whatever, bullshitting around. I was too lazy to do the Punk News one because, I don't know, didn't feel like writing blurbs a few weeks ago. I probably, if I was on winter break already, totally would have done it, but I didn't have time when Johnny G was asking for him. So what I decided, I looked at all of the official Punk News lists from everybody, and there were a few that lined up with some of the ones I liked with what other people liked. But I'm known as the indie rock guy, I guess. Every time I would do a list, people would complain in the comments about how I should write for Pitchfork and yada, yada, yada.
Really? So, like, still? Still?
Well, let's see. The last time I did one that officially was on there was 2011, maybe, and I was still getting that kind of stuff. But so what I'm going to do is play... The three I'm going to play today are all from albums that made nobody's lists on the staff, but stuff that I think should have. So the first one I'm going to play is by a band called Parquet Courts. And Parquet Courts, I believe, are from Brooklyn, I want to say. Yes, Brooklyn. And they basically put out two albums this year. The first one was like the official one, and the second one was like an alternate name kind of slapdash thing. But their first album this year was called Sunbathing Animal, and it is fantastic. Kind of like that raw kind of not sloppy but kind of loose stuff like Pavement would do, but they also have some faster tracks that definitely could be called punk. So the one I'm gonna play is one of the ones that's a little faster. It's called Ducking and Dodging. So, yeah, this is Parquet Courts.
Radiate as all sucking and dodging, but you can't come home no more. Right there on the silver screen, heard the sounds suggesting lineage of influence. Yeah, I saw it there in the motherland. Steps and gables, steeples, stairways wind away from origin. In untrampled vintage floats the proof I cannot be freed. The concert stage, the velvet cage, the glass perimeter of me. All my friends are disappearing. All my letters are in codes. All I ever think and feel in your shadow, it erodes. Waiting by the silent phone, I draft my next apology. Burn my letters once they're read. Unalloyed joy, I thrice repeat. Unalloyed joy, unalloyed joy. Listen to what I just heard. It's raining on the sun, jailbird. And just like you, the way it moves, a fog that creeps in, grinning always in your hair and in your hallways. Got detained in San Francisco on your way to get fresh air. The USA didn't want you there. Juggled oranges, but no one cared. You've been ducking, dodging, but you can't come home no more. You've been ducking and dodging, but you can't come home no more.
Sonic Avenues, followed by Parquet Courts. And I know that Greg DeSimp or Greggy Ta mentioned the best of the year. And just today, actually, we posted the top 20 best of the year records that voted by the staff and editors. Our number one was Against Me. Were you guys surprised that Against Me was the selected by the editors and staff as the top record of the year? I kind of think that's what most people expected.
Yeah. As you started going through, like, you posted the first five of the, like, reviewers' lists, and you already saw it popping up pretty high, and then as you saw the editors' lists, it was it was pretty apparent that it was going to take it.
I got to say, this year I was really – I mean, you know, my shtick is that, you know, punk news isn't punk enough. We need more punk music. But I got to say, this year we had a lot of punk – like straight-up punk on our list. I mean, we had Off at number 3, which is a phenomenal record. And I think Adam White called that his the second-best record of the year.
That was my number one.
Number one of the year. And it was – see, my – well, I did it as number 3, and I felt kind of bad about that. But we'll talk about that in a minute. We had
– my casual list, it was number 5.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's, people love it. I mean, that was a great record. We had World Inferno at 6, Masked Intruder, which you could say is punk at 7, Dwarves at 9, quite surprisingly, White Lung at 11. We had, let's see here, Puppet at 18, Neighborhood Brats at 19, and Morning Glory at 20. So we had a lot of straight-up punk on this year's list, and not, you know, like, not feeling punk, just straight-up punk.
I've got a feeling looking at it that there's a few things on this list that, and they're bands that I included on my list, so I definitely like these records, but that I think managed to climb a little bit higher because everyone on the staff has listened to this thing and ranked it, and not necessarily have ranked it highly. But it's got, like, enough kind of wide appeal that it's going to bump up there. So, like, I think, like, for example, like, the Menzingers and Restorations records that came out this year, those of us that kind of like that style of stuff, we liked those records. We all included them on our lists. But I don't think they were really number one, number two for any of us. They were just kind of like, they were in the back nine, let's say. But enough of us had heard it, and enough of us are into that, that that's sort of the common denominator. So that's why you see, you know, those records rank so highly on the list, on the cumulative list when you add it all up. I think the Against Me one, you could say the same thing about, but I think that was a special record. That was a little bit of a momentous event more than the other ones. Like, I don't think anyone seemed to get, you know, no one got that excited, I feel, about the Menzingers record. But, you know, all of us that like the Menzingers, you know, like that record, it was fine. But no one was going crazy about it. But I feel that more people actually had that kind of reaction to Against Me. So, you know, so kudos to them for being up there. I mean, the Lawrence Arms is the same thing. No one, I think, except for one of the people, and I'm trying to think who it was, one of our editors, gave, say, the Metropole by Lawrence Arms the number one this year.
Might be Joe Pallone, I think.
Yeah, everyone else was just kind of like, yeah, I like the Lawrence Arms. There's a new Lawrence Arms record. You know, all right, cool. It's number 8 or whatever, right? Number 16. But enough people, the band's got enough name recognition amongst the staff that enough people had listened to it that it got on there. Meanwhile, you compare that to, say, I want to say, like, White Lung or, say, like, Neighborhood Brats or Morning Glory, where not a lot of the staff mentioned them, but those that did mention it ranked it really high, and that kind of added up. So, just, I don't know, this might be a little bit too inside baseball, because, like, I'm the one that did the tally, so I know how the numbers broke down, but you know, it's always interesting to see how this works out, because it really is just the cumulative results of a bunch of independent people writing their own lists, and there's no one that, you know, it's not like the it's not like the Oscars where everyone gets a screener of all the movies that we're going to talk about, that we're going to vote on, right? So, like, not everyone has heard all the records that are on this list. And what comes out here is really a result of, like, what everyone chose to go listen to.
True. I guess related to that is I had a real Sophie's Choice situation. my top 3 records, man, I mean, it could have went any way, and I felt bad. I mean, honestly, like, my top 3 were Dwarves, World Inferno, and Off. And I wanted to give them all the top number 1, and I thought, well, could I do a 2- or 3-way tie? And I thought, well, that's kind of being a wimp, you know what I mean? But also, if you do a tie, then, like, nobody's happy, you know? So I felt bad about giving those bands 2 and 3 because I really do think they deserve number 1. But the Dwarves deserve number 1 too. So I had a real tough time picking my top 1, 2, and 3. My toughest year ever, honestly.
I think they'll forgive you.
I hope. I mean, I felt bad. I honestly felt bad about giving World Inferno number two. Off, I didn't feel as bad about because they're big boys and they can take it. I mean, Off doesn't need my – well, neither does World Inferno. But I've got a closer relationship to World Inferno and Dwarves than I do Off. Even though, but I do have a relationship with Off.
I think that I think for a lot of, let's say, the smaller bands, not necessarily Off or World Inferno, being just included at all for some of these bands is a big deal. Not that we're that big a deal. I don't mean it that way, but
we're a big deal, Adam.
Punk News is a big deal. But I know that like there's bands where I included that they ended up at like who am I going to single out here? Like the Steve Ademic band, which is another Dirtnap release actually, Dial Tone was number 19 on my list. Steve reached out to thank me, right? So to him, he wasn't like, oh, man, I was number 19. That's not very high. But on the other hand, he was like, hey, I was included. That's awesome. Thank you. So, you know.
Yeah, I had bands that would I had bands retweet stuff when I would tweet about even just my personal list. And it didn't make like the overall staff list compiled. Like, I'm just like, hey, your record, you know, was my number five. And they're like, awesome. And they retweet the link and stuff like that. These bands at this level, they still, you know, really dig that kind of stuff.
So you guys had no problems with like your top three listings at all, huh?
I usually do. It was really easy for me to give it to Off this year.
That is a badass record, isn't it? That record is badass.
Yeah, it is. And it was I listened to it in a different way than I would listen to a lot of other stuff. And I think I would probably have – I had a lot more of a hard time juggling, like, let's say, between number, like – 3 and 8 in my list, and that got very fluid. But it just felt really easy for me to go like, yeah, of course Off is at the top, because that was great and I kept listening to it all the time. So Off, good, easy.
Yeah, for me usually the number one is pretty obvious. Yeah, the hardest and what seems just kind of random is like 15 to 20. You know, it's like, oh, these are good, but like as far as comparing one to the other, gets a little hazy that far in the list.
See, that's weird. For me, it's the exact opposite. For me, like, the top three are always the hardest. Like, who's going to get the number one spot? For this was the hardest year for me ever, and I felt bad. So let me try to make up to World Inferno a little bit, because I did like the World Inferno record as much as the Dwarves, but I had to give number one to somebody. You know, I felt terrible about it. Let's play a track from World Inferno's phenomenal new album. Their new album is their most mature release, but it's also one of their most energetic and skilled releases. Usually when people say mature, they mean, like, more laid back or more subtle. This is not a subtle record. This is a highly technique and highly skilled record and highly clever album, but it's also bombastic and mature, if you will. Let's play a jam from that. My pick from World Inferno's new album. Let's do the opener, Dolce Far Niente, which like opens up with Jack Terrycloth just doing his awesome, showing the range of his vocals, which is great. So that's my pick, Dolce Far Niente from World Inferno's This Packed Funeral, out on Alternative Tentacles.
All right, so I'm gonna follow that up with really the lead single from the Single Mothers release that came out this year, their debut LP after that amazing EP that they had out a few years ago. So the LP that came out, it was on in Canada, it was on Dynalone Music. On in the US, it was on a label that is a sub-label, that is an imprint of Death Wish Inc. I don't remember what it's called, but anyways, just look it up. So we're going to play Marbles, which is the main single from the Single Mothers record. This was such a good punk rock record that straddled that line between hardcore and between the kind of, say, like, lyric-based stuff that the Orgcore crowd really likes. I can't get enough of this. I mean, it sounds like the band is playing away like early Black Flag, and then the Drew Thompson, the lead singer, is coming in with these crazy well-written poetry-like vocals that he's just sneering out and spitting out as he's going. Marbles in particular, this was one part in this song where just like the mocking way in which he's delivering the lines is just amazing to me. So that this record did not show up on more of our editors' lists makes me question the priorities of what some of our editors were listening to. Because to me, this is far and above just one of the most exciting punk rock records that came out this year. So anyway, so the song I'm going to play is Marbles by Single Mothers.
Okay, and then mine, it's another one that didn't make anybody's in the staff's list, but is an awesome album. It's Cymbals Eat Guitars, one of my favorites. It's their third album called Lose. Their Greg, debut Greg, album. I'm going to yes. pause
you. What does that band's name mean, or does it mean nothing?
I think it's just kind of like that drums would win over guitars in a battle for dominance. I don't know. You know,
see, in my mind, I imagine like an anthropomorphic symbol that like climbs off the thing, and starts eating guitars. Literally, that's what that band's name conjures in my mind.
You know, to be honest, when I randomly checked them out for the first time, I'm primarily a drummer who also plays guitar, but drums, you know, that's my love. So it was like, you know, drums win over guitars. So I'm like, that's a really cool name. I checked them out, and I happened to love them.
See, I thought they were a screamo band. What kind of band are they?
No, they were bringing the 90s back way before, like, this whole emo thing and all this other stuff. 90s, like, alternative influences started coming back. These guys are not emo. They are drawing from, like, Modest Mouse and Built to Spill, but also have, like, a lot of fuzzier kind of shoegaze guitar tones. There's a little bit of screaming, but it's not screamo. I mean, it's just, like, intense. Really dynamic, lots of slow parts, fast parts, loud parts, quiet parts, like all over the place. And their debut was my number one in 2009. And it was one of those that – this was back when Brian Schultz was the reviews editor, and I believe. And when I reviewed it, I gave it the perfect 10. And I know how – what John thinks about that kind of thing for a new release. And Brian was not as crazy about, like, arguing with that, but even he messaged me. He's like, did you mean to put 10? I'm like, hell yeah, I did. Yeah, and it ended up at my number one. So this their second album, they faltered a little bit, but their third one now, Lose, they are back for sure. Did you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, we'll play the tunes and then I'll chime in.
You guys cool with me playing a 6-minute song? Or I'll pick a different one.
Kick it off. What is it?
All right. This song is called Jackson by Cymbals Eat Guitars.
Trust me, you don't need to talk to me about something. Please just go. Really, you don't need to be honest with me. You don't need to see me now. Just go. I am not gonna die in peace when I go. There you go. How proud her friends must have been of her when they bowed to think of her. And there you go. There is no need for you to be honest with me. Married, I have knots. I'm tired of knots. No people like show people, at least not any people I know. You look like someone else would think is attractive. How's that work? Me indoors of a good understanding in the event of my unfortunate death. People always like a bone when you're dead. Isn't that what you said? Where'd you go? Paranoia is just good common sense. You think you're the exception, do you really think so? I like the way you touch yourself, it's a real turn on. Please go on. I don't have a problem with magic beans and can quit whenever I want. You look like someone else would think is attractive. How's that go? I don't need you to be honest with me. Please just, please just, please just go. Just go. I am not going to die this way. I go and there you go. How loud her friends must have been a hole when they bother to think of
Towards Six Flags, to wait in lines.
And that was World Inferno, Friendship Society, followed by Single Mothers, followed by Cymbals Eat Guitars. And actually, I had a small conflict with a writer about the 10 out of 10. And everyone knows Ronaldo, classic Ronaldo. Ronaldo loves giving stuff 10s. And honestly, let me just briefly explain the reviews editor's processes. I am not going, like, people think that sometimes I'll try to subject my view of a record onto a record. That's not true at all. I would give a Limp Bizkit 10 out of 10 if somebody wanted to. I would give Insane Clown Posse 10 out of 10 if they wanted to. The only thing is, you have to be able to defend that 10 out of 10. And so I had a conflict with a writer a little while ago. He gave this record 10 out of 10. And I said, well, what makes it 10 out of 10? He's like, well, just a really good record. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but what makes it special? What makes it unique? Why does it stand up above other records? And he says, well, it doesn't. Well, then it can't be a 10 out of 10. A 10 out of 10 has to be a unique record. It has to be extremely special. It has to be as good as London Calling. And people say, well, I don't think London Calling is that good, John. Well, then it's got to be as good as Damaged, or it's got to be as good as Nevermind the Bollocks, or it's got to be good as Clash Number One, or it's got to be good as whatever you think is the best record, or not as good, close to that league. It can't just be a really good record. It has to be exceptional. It has to be clever. It has to be unique. And it has to be a lasting record, not just a really good record. So that's what a 10 out of 10 out of punknews.org is.
So have you – I just wanted to jump in. Have you personally given a 10 to anything that was a recent record?
I have. Let me look up. I give out 10 very, very, very rarely. But let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, for me it's been like maybe one every other year or something like that.
I think the first review I ever did was the Lee Scratch Perry live record. I gave that a 10 out of 10. That's really more like a 9 out of 10, I think. I mean, but that was years and years ago. Let me see what I've given a 10 out of 10 to. I've given a 10 out of 10. Oh, one second. I've given a 10 out of 10 to. Well, while I'm looking this up, did you guys go to any hot shows this year, any kick-ass shows this year? What amazing shows have you guys been to this year?
I'll pick up on this. And actually, if anyone wants to read all my bullshit about this, there's a huge preamble to my list that's about this very thing. And it's funny because if you look at the comments of that article, there's a comment from Mark from Ottawa, our transplants buddy, because he actually mentioned in his correspondence with this podcast, as we debated the transplants, that I should really go up to Ottawa for the Arboretum Festival, and I did. And Arboretum was this kind of beautiful linchpin for everything that I was listening to this year. The Constantines reunited this year, so that was, of course, a big deal for me. You know, I had tickets to their first big reunion show up in Toronto, but I... With Arboretum, I had the opportunity to go see them again. And it was sort of a last-minute decision that I pulled together where, like, you know what, I'm going to go buy a train ticket and just, like, get up to Ottawa and stay in an Airbnb for a day and go to this one day of festival and then get home and, you know, not just burn the midnight oil as much as I can to get to and from a rock show. And that's not something that I do these days very much because I have... you know, like a job and a family and responsibilities and things like that. Like I can't just like fuck off and go to see a music thing for a weekend. But I did. And there was a lot, there was so much there that factored in to what ended up being my favorite stuff of the year. So before the Cons played at this outdoor festival, the Steve Adamic Band was there and they played. Weaves, which is, they released a great EP on Buzz Records, played that. Chad Van Galen played that. Yeah, I know.
Hey, listen, tell me about this Chad Van Galen guy. I heard you guys talking about him. He sounds, he's like weird, you guys say, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this guy and why I should check him out.
Greg, you give the one over here.
Okay, he's like, I mean, apparently he's a family man, too. You'd think that he was just like a hermit who just went off into the woods in wherever he's from in Canada. I can't remember right now. Just in some, like, trailer. Collecting all these instruments out of the garbage and like putting them together into weird modified things and just recording every instrument himself. So this guy just has like total control. So his brain, which is, I don't know, he's fucked up or like he does a lot of drugs when he writes and records, but he just has total control over this and does whatever the hell he wants. So you got songs of his that will be folky, like banjo and accordion. He likes to put clarinet on a lot of stuff, but then the lyrics are just like really dark and bizarre. And then you'll have other songs that are really hard rock, and then you'll have other ones that have a lot of electronic influences, drum machines and synths. And then he'll animate his own videos, and that's when things really get creepy and trippy, because his style of animation is just kind of otherworldly stuff. I don't know. Have you seen his videos, Adam?
I haven't seen any of his videos, at least not recently. But what always has stood out to me about Chad is just that it's just how kind of dark and weird his stuff gets. The thing that sticks in my head the most is the song "Cut Off My Hands" from the new record. Anyways, just to kind of like to circle back, Chad is like is just an incredibly I think amongst like the Canadian indie rock scene, he's incredibly respected. He doesn't play a whole heck of a lot, so when he does, people show up. He's so like iconoclastic that that's a good word for it. Yeah, when he shows up and does something, it really matters. This was actually where I was watching him at Arboretum. Like one of the guys from Kids in the Hall wandered by, because like it's like all the various like celebrity people that were in Ottawa, I guess, had to show up and watch Chad Van Galen play. But anyways, though, so Chad played that show, and then after that outdoor thing was done, across town, in a little record store / recording studio called Gabba Hay, that was in like an industrial park that's in Ottawa, there was the record release show for a band called New Swears, who I'm going to play a song from right now, and playing that show was Grays and the Dirty Nil, which are also bands that I had listened to this year. That show was actually curated by the Ottawa Explosion, which is a big festival that goes on in Ottawa every year that brings up, like, you know, every kind of like lo-fi garage punk band you could imagine to play it. And so much of that stuff ended up factoring into what I listened to this year. So that just that singular day had just tentacles in all of the stuff that I listened to. It was amazing how much of it converged on that. So what about you guys? Shows?
Neutral Milk Hotel.
Honestly,
I saw it in February. I was not. It blew my fucking mind.
I was not a fan of Neutral Milk Hotel. I saw them live. It made me a fan. They're great.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
It really did. Dude, I think the music is better live than on record, honestly.
Okay. They're another band that, like, if you really delve into their lyrics, I mean, again, kind of like Chad Van Galen, where the imagery and the darkness of it is just like really, I don't know, it really sucks you in lyrically. But I love the arrangements as well. I mean, I play accordion. I picked up the singing saw because of Neutral Milk Hotel, playing a saw with a goddamn violin bow. I mean, I love the wacky stuff that's on those songs. But yeah, so they were awesome in Chicago. That was in February. Then I saw Weezer in Nashville at the famous Ryman Auditorium, and they played Pinkerton in its entirety, so that was pretty fantastic. And then, actually, just 2 days ago in Chicago, I saw American Football, classic Chicago emo band who reunited since Polyvinyl re-released, reissued an expanded version of their one and only album, and Braid opened up for them. So that was just a couple days ago, and that was fantastic. So those are my top three.
Yeah, this year I saw a lot of cool shows, and I'll try to just blast through some of the highlights. Last night I saw Plow United on New Year's Eve. It was a great show. I actually didn't know that much about Plow United, but I didn't realize how punky they actually were. They've got sort of that, you know, 90s rock thing on, but it was punky, super high energy, and plus Mikey Erg came on stage at the end of the night and they covered a Miley Cyrus song. It's called like Whip It or something like that. It's like or Move It. I don't know. Not Miley Cyrus. I'm sorry. The other girl who's really popular, Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift they covered, and that was that was really cool. I saw the Dwarves, which was wild because in the circle pit, one guy was wearing like football pads and was just like crashing into people. It was insane. I saw Mike Watt's new band, Il Sogno del Marinaio, and on record it sounds kind of jazzy, kind of quiet, but live it was more like Wagner. It was like loud, cacophonous. Honestly, Mike Watt is an amazing. On record, Mike Watt is kind of like a noodly bass player, but live he does that, but he also thunders like Thin Lizzy or stuff like that. It was an amazing show. If you get a chance to see Mike Watt's Il Sogno del Marinaio, it's him and two Italian guys. They sound way different than on record. It was really, really good. I saw Kettle Rebellion, which is the proto version of Mischief Brew. Their only show in like 10 years and probably their last show ever. That was amazing. I saw Nick Turner of Hawkwind, which we talked about this earlier. If you guys know Hawkwind, they're like the first space rock group. It's kind of like where hippie and like heavy metal and punk rock combine. Nick Turner's like 74. He comes out. He's playing this saxophone, and like he's this old dude. He's like blasting the saxophone into people's ears. He's singing about like flying through space and like mental orgasms and stuff. And like meanwhile, the band is just like soloing for like 14 minutes. Meanwhile, he's got two absolutely beautiful girls that both play the violin, that both play the keyboard, that sing like in tandem. And it was like a trippy, amazing thing. I saw Blowfly in Philadelphia do his thing. You know, Blowfly is a very famous blues musician that did like really filthy songs. I saw Buzz Osborne in Philadelphia with Joe Pallone, and this was crazy. At the Buzz Osborne show, this guy like was heckling Buzz Osborne like really, really, really bad. But the weird thing was, is the guy had like this high pitched voice and like made him sound like this, and he was like, and I'm not making fun of how people, but I'm making fun of this guy, because if I had a voice like this guy, I would not heckle bands, but he was like, shut up and play some music, and like, I'm like, is this guy serious? And this guy was so drunk, he like marches to the front of the stage, and he's like, why don't you play some music instead of talking? And it was like, like, if you got a voice like that, like, people were, like, laughing at him. Well, actually, you know, people were more, like, stunned, because they couldn't believe this guy with this ridiculous voice was drunk and heckling, like, in public. You think he wouldn't, like, want to draw attention to his voice. I saw Jello Biafra and Mischief Brew, and let me tell you, like, the Jello Biafra set was, like, was a normal set, but they were so amazing live. Jello Biafra, I think, is in his live prime. I've seen, like, Dead Kennedy videos and stuff, and they're cool, but Jello now is so loud, so berserk, so energetic. It is amazing. Jello friggin' rules. And I saw World Inferno in Brooklyn for Hallowmas 2014. They played for about 2 hours. They were just fun. Like, for a while, see, World Inferno is like classic period is like 2005 to like 2009. After that, almost everybody quit except for like two members, and they kind of like petered along with like five members for a while. Most of those people quit, but now World Inferno is back up to like 7 to 9 people. And I gotta say, World Inferno is in a new live prime. They sounded so fantastic live, I couldn't believe it. But I guess my most surprising live show was. I just went to the show by just because I had nothing to do. It was like a Thursday night, so I'll go check it out. It was this band, Bad Canoes, which is Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Females, Dawn Riddle, Kate Ills, and Christina Centaur. And I would say it's the center point between the Screamers, the Slits, and X-Ray Specs. And it is the most berserk, wild, amazing, snappy punk rock music I've heard in a long, 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 long time. This blew my mind live. You have got to see this band live. And I'm going to play one of their songs after Adam and Greg's. I'm going to play, let me play 6666 off their new EP called Sisterhood is Powerful. Best new brand new band of 2014.
All right, well, you lead off with that one, so I'm going to follow that up with song from the aforementioned New Swears. So New Swears, kind of a drunken party punk band out of Ottawa, Ontario. The song I'm going to play is called Midnight Lovers. The record is called Junk Food Forever, Bedtime Whenever. The New Swears record right now is only available on Bachelor Records, which is out of Europe, and I was just recently trying to acquire one of these, and in North America, it's a little bit of a pricey thing to acquire because you have to get it shipped from Europe. However, the depth of my journalistic skills here have dug up basically by asking Twitter that this is getting a North American release. A Dirt Cult Records is going to end up releasing it at some point in the spring or summer of 2015. So there you go. So you can actually get it on vinyl then, but you can find the whole thing on Bandcamp right now. So this song is called Midnight Lovers. It's by New Swears. And Greg, what do you got?
All right. Mine is yet another one that made nobody's list, and this one really surprised me. This was my number one, my favorite record of the year on my unofficial list. This is Cloud Nothings, and I just became aware of them this year, and they totally just, I just fell in love with them. This is like their third record, I believe. I don't know, they've had a couple other things, but never really checked them out until now. And just really good. Again, kind of a 90s influence and kind of a maybe a Nirvana In Utero kind of way, where the recording's a little raw, but not necessarily lo-fi. The drums are just thundering. The guitars are gritty and kind of just wild. And the vocals are usually melodic, but then really just he just tears his vocal cords out at certain sections like Cobain used to. So this one I really think people will love. I think, John, you got to check this out for sure. So I'm going to play this song called Psychic Trauma. And again, this is Cloud Nothings off their album Here and Nowhere Else.
Six.
podcast. We just played Bad Canoes and Adam. What was your band again?
New Swears.
And Greg, what was your band?
Cloud Nothings.
So I'm just going to name the bands that I played if people want to check them out, and you guys can do the same. I played Dwarves off the new Dwarves record off the Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll on Greedy and Recess Records. I played World Inferno's Dolce Nien Far Niente off Alternative Tentacles Records, Jello Biafra, amazing song. And I played Bad Canoes' 666. Bad Canoes' 6666 off their self-released demo cassette. You can get it on Bandcamp at Bad Canoes, called Sisterhood is Powerful.
Yeah, so what I played was you heard Sonic Avenues playing Teenage Brain off the record Mistakes that came out on Dirtnap. Following that, we had Single Mothers with the song Marbles off the record Negative Qualities that was released, again, on Dine Alone in Canada and on, if you go to, I think, the Death Wish Inc. website in the States, you'll be able to find it in the States. And the third one was New Swears. We played the song Midnight Lovers. The album is called Junk Food Whenever Bedtime, or sorry, Junk Food Forever, Bedtime Whenever. And it right now is out on Bachelor Records in Europe, but it'll be out on Dirt Cult soon in North America.
And I played Parquet Courts off of Sunbathing Animal. The song was called Ducking and Dodging. And then I played Cymbals Eat Guitars, the song Jackson off of their album Lose. And then I played off my favorite record of the year, Cloud Nothings. I played Psychic Trauma, which is on their record Here and Nowhere Else.
And that wraps up this episode of the Punk News Podcast. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Thanks for listening this past year. I think we got a lot of exciting stuff planned for 2015. What do you guys say? We got a lot of exciting stuff planned?
Nope, unsubscribe.
Well, listen, stay tuned because I can't wait to I myself for Punk News am working on at least two super exciting projects. Can't wait to unveil them. So they might even be unveiled by the time you hear this. And anyways, thanks for listening. Reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we'll see you next week, baby. Please don't take that as a sexual harassment. I call everybody baby.